Welcome to the Unspoken Uncensored podcast. Before we start the episode, apologies for last week. The podcast was switched to a new home, Anchor FM, so we could not upload an episode at that time. So this week, you will get a double cast with episode 8 and 9 being released simultaneously. Keep supporting, keep listening. Follow us on our new Instagram page and on YouTube. The links will be available on our new Anchor FM page. And don't be afraid to speak words unspoken.
Last week, there was all kind of crazy rainstorm going on. There was flooding. It was a bit mad.
Really? Oh, it's probably the rainy season. Does Germany have a rainy season?
This was out of the ordinary. Oh. It so happened to come at the same time as other floods around the world. So I think New York and the East Coast, like Northeast in the States, was pretty flooded up. Parts of West London, I think it was, were pretty flooded. Like literally, there was water coming out of tunnels.
Oh, damn.
And people in the country, they were having like landslides and shit. Their houses being swept away. People got trapped in their basements in their home. It was a bit grim, man. Bit grim.
Wow. So I don't know what other proof that people need about global warming. I mean, every summer it gets hotter. Every winter it gets colder. The weather's getting more and more crazy. And people are like, no, it doesn't exist. It's not a thing.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Why maybe?
It could also be geoengineering.
Say that again?
Geoengineering.
Geoengineering. What's geoengineering?
Yeah. That's the ability to manipulate weather movements.
So now you're saying that we can, or some humans, I should say, can manipulate the weather.
Is it out of the realm of possibility?
I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility. I just genuinely think that the technology is not there yet. We can hardly predict what's going on throughout the day, let alone control the weather just yet.
As if we can tell people anything you want.
This is true.
On the internet. And this on the TV, you can be like, oh yeah, it's going to be raining at 12 o'clock and then blah, 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 blah. You can say whatever the fuck you want, you know. But and at the same time, there could still be people who are like, are you about to fuck these motherfuckers up? bring that, what'd you call it? I don't even know what you call them. It's like a harp machine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're called harps. So I don't remember what it stands for.
Okay. You're talking about the heart monitor.
Harp. Yeah, what is it?
Yeah,
high frequency active auroral research program.
Oh,
the military was using.
Okay.
Yeah. And so where is it?
So
apparently they closed it. They claim to have closed the program.
First of all, what is this program? What are you talking about? What program is this?
Okay, yeah, I kind of skipped over some steps.
Yeah, you skipped over a lot of steps.
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia for all of your information needs.
So the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, aka HARP, was initiated as an ionospheric research program jointly funded by the US Air Force, US Navy, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is DARPA. It was built by blah, 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 some other corporation, and says its original purpose was to analyze the ionosphere and investigate the potential for developing ionospheric enhancement technology for radio communications and surveillance. So in other words, the potential for developing ionospheric enhancement is essentially manipulating weather conditions in order to optimize radio communications and surveillance. And they say that openly on Wikipedia there.
Okay.
Oh. So it also says, in the lower paragraph, it says, HARP is a target of conspiracy theorists who claim that it's capable of weaponizing weather. So they're creating polarity in this description already. But what they've admitted in this article is that some degree of manipulation, if not necessarily all-out control, is possible.
Okay. So I'm not saying that it's not possible for people to be able to control the weather. I'm just saying I don't think that they're there yet. I do understand that most of the technology we have now is because of two things. Two major things is the reason why we have the technology we have today. One is because of wars. When people want to really kill another person, they find any way to do it. The best way, precise way, most technological way. That's why wars always bring forth most of the technology we use. And the second thing is sex, because sex, no matter what, will always sell. How can we get porn into people's lives faster and easier and more effectively? Those are the two things that really push technology. Hence why we have all these robot dolls all over the place. So I understand what you're saying, that these governments, these armies, I should say, are holding tech that, you know, haven't trickled down to the masses yet. But I still don't think they're on the level of controlling the weather. I mean, I know they're trying to control the weather. I'm just saying they're not there yet. They will be probably. But not yet, I don't think so.
I don't think we would have any way of knowing how advanced technology actually is right now.
Oh, no, that's 100% a fact. Because we already know, like, most of the things that we use, the military had, decades ago, before it was even mass produced for the public. So we know that the armies are already at least 40 years or 30 years advanced in tech, something like that.
I would go even beyond that.
Beyond that?
If you want to put, because even years in terms of technology is a sort of limited way of measuring. And we ourselves, like these human bodies, this is an advanced piece of biotechnology.
Yeah, it is.
We're moving around in it. It's a highly advanced piece of biotechnology. And the story goes that it just all happened kind of naturally, right?
Yeah.
Through different processes after a big bang and everything. That just kind of randomly, through some super slim chance, resulted in these highly advanced life forms, right? I don't buy that. I don't buy that story. At the same time, I don't buy the other polarity of the story, which is, oh yeah, there's just a supreme creator being who is like, all right, fuck it, I want some people to worship me now. So here we go. You know? And at the same time, I feel there is truth in both of them. And something that helped me to kind of come to a deeper understanding, not necessarily an understanding that makes sense, that I can explain, but sort of just an inner feeling, is a book called The Epic of Gilgamesh.
Oh, The Epic of Gilgamesh. Oh, yeah. Gilgamesh, yeah, yeah. That was the first king, right? The first king of something, Gilgamesh?
Sumeria.
Yeah, if I'm correct on that.
Yeah. And those stories of the Sumerians and the Anunnaki are quite interesting. And again, I feel as though they hold some truth.
Oh, he was
One is able to sort of see the common elements between the Bible and the other holy books, between scientific theories. You know, there's something that unites all of them.
Okay. So what in the Book of Gilgamesh makes you think that that science, evolution and religion haven't really got this all right? I want to know. What do you think? What do you mean?
It's not about having it all right. It's just that when you have an ultimate truth that is so, let's say, complex, too complex for a human mind to understand. Mm-hmm. The only way you can sort of reintroduce that truth is through story and mythology and symbols. If you were to say to whatever the story of us is, if you were to just tell a human, most of them would be like, stop talking shit, or I don't understand what the fuck you're talking about. you know, most of us would literally be like that. So it kind of has to be fragmented, let's say, into different pieces. So,
okay.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, you mean babified for us. Everything's been
in a sense, yeah.
PG-13 for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. So then you can have the science nuts arguing for their case. You can have the religious nuts arguing for their case. And the different sects within each just arguing about how they're right.
And everyone else is wrong. And that you'll find out at the end when we're in heaven and you're burning in hell. Or the science right. guy saying, there is no heaven and hell, you idiots. There's just going to be nothing. Yeah.
Exactly. And everyone just, and even that truth there, the fact that there is no heaven and hell, but at the same time, there is a heaven and hell. Just the fact that these two things can both be true is difficult for the average human mind to comprehend and okay. to accept.
Also, I kind of cut you off. You were continuing.
No, that's generally it. Oh, okay. That's generally it. It's just that there's elements of truth in everything. Like, let's put it this way. If there is a fight, if there's a fight that breaks out on the street and 10 people are there to witness it, right? You're not going to get the whole truth of that fight from one person. You're going to have to speak to each of those 10 and then sort of piece together what happened.
I get what you're saying. I get that. I get what you're saying. I mean, to be honest, if you actually just look into science in general, if you look into science, most of these scientists, they're saying that from what we have observed at this point, this is what we think is going on. This is what we generally guess to be true because it makes sense when we do the math. But then later on, they realize, oh, we missed a part. Actually, it's more closer to this, or it's more closer to that. But even in the science world, not everything is 100% correct. You know, like for almost all my life, I thought Pluto was a planet. And then one year, everyone's like, actually, Pluto was not a part of that motherfucker. He ain't a planet at all. Like, oh, shit. So, you know, science can't get it right all of the time. And I guess religion is the same, seeing as we have so many religious sects. Not, you know, which one's correct? So, yeah, I get that. I get what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So, yeah. To be honest, it's like, this all leads to the thing where, you know, all of these different religions are pretty much, it's pretty much the thing where, what is the makeup of a person? Right? Because before we were talking about how we have a mind, we have a body, we have a soul, right? And you're saying that everything, well, we have to get the accumulation of all the religions, piece it together to figure out what's actually going on, right?
Not necessarily piecing it together, but going to the root, going to the root. So like the way I like to visualize it, I don't remember if I spoke about it before, if I just wanted to, but in terms of what a soul is, right? Yeah, I remember we kind of mentioned it, but we can go deeper into that. So the way that I see a soul is it's a body of light. A soul is a body of light, which is why it relates to that word soul for sun in Latin. And it's what beams, it's what projects into this holographic reality. And upon coming into this reality, a certain level of consciousness is quote unquote lost. So in order to project, to beam into a human form, one must give up the higher experience as a soul. So when I come into this human life, it's like, all right, shit, I'm doing this human thing again, right? Or if it's the first incarnation, then I'm doing this human thing now. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we may not be separate souls. So there may just be one oversoul, so to speak, like one grand soul, which fractalizes. So if you've looked at fractals and how they manifest themselves in nature, I think we spoke about the fractals on the tree, right? And how the trunk turns into, it splits into two, and then that splits into smaller branches, and then those split into even smaller branches, that split into even smaller ones, which the leaves grow on. And then the leaves split into like the patterns on them, they split into infinitely smaller and smaller patterns. So that's fractals, and that's sort of how I see this reality. That soul, that grand soul, splitting into infinitely smaller fractals of itself and going to have different experiences. So in the place that we call India, in the place that we call England, in the place that we call Japan, in the place that we call Germany, and so on and so forth. Having these different experiences and coming to an understanding from different perspectives. So it's not necessarily, like, let's say we're speaking about religion. It's not necessarily, okay, let's piece together the Buddhist philosophy with the Christian philosophy. But it's what is at the root of these Christian beliefs and these philosophies that is also at the root of Buddhist philosophies.
Okay. I understand that, because to make it simpler, it's kind of like a thing where if you look at every single religion and you look at them properly, what you tend to realize is that there's a lot of similarities that they all share. They all share similarities where there's this divine being who decided to either use their blood or their breath or their something or the clay or something, to create the heavens, the earth, and thus the animals and people. And it's all the same thing. Like I always thought that what happened is that the original humans, they had this, whatever the belief system was. And as the society grew, you have more and more people. What happens is some people break off and they go exploring. And then they take, like you said, the root of the religion, go somewhere else. And then through the millennia, they form a different language, a different culture. It's still the same root, but then that changes depending on where they've moved to now and what they're doing and the kind of environment that they're in. And then, like, if you want to look at something that's even more close to today, look at the Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. It's like they're all three in the same. They're three of the same thing. Like, you can even look at Christianity in itself and how many different sects of Christianity there are. You've got Jehovah's Witness, you've got the Catholics, you've got the so many, like Baptists, you've got so many Mormons. Like, it's crazy how you can have people believe in the same thing but believe it in a different way. And then they all fight each other on who's correct. It always baffles me how people do that. But that's pretty much the layman's terms of what you were saying. But with the soul thing you were talking about, I know you haven't watched this, but there's a thing in manga and now in anime called Shaman King. And if you watch, it's actually really good. I liked it anyway. If you watched or read the original Shaman King manga, what you realize is that it's actually quite deep when they got into it. The writer actually did a good job. There's a King of Souls. And this King of Souls is the accumulation of every single soul on this planet. So even animals, humans, every single soul is accumulated that creates this King of Souls. And basically, the Shaman King is born once every few thousand millennia or whatever to basically be the host of the great soul, to be like a medium to control how the destiny of the planet, basically. And they're trying to hint to Jesus was one of the Shaman Kings, hence why Jesus was such an influential figure, blah, blah, blah. They were trying to hint at stuff like that. And what was really smart about the show is that they said that in the grand soul, there are different heavens and different hells. And it all depends on whatever faith you believed in when you were alive. If you're a Christian and you believed in a heaven and you thought you were good and then you died, then when your spirit goes back to the grand soul, back to the source, then your spirit, your mind goes to whatever heaven you thought you were going to go to. And it's your belief itself that creates this spatial part in the grand soul that creates that belief system. So if you were a shitty person and you thought you were in a really shit and you believe in Christianity, then you will go to hell in the grand soul. If you were Buddhist, or no, was it, is it Hindu? And you believed in reincarnation, then your soul will go back to the grand soul and then you'll get reincarnated as like a butterfly or something. And it's really interesting how they really explained it. And yeah.
Bro, that's dope. That's dope. I need to watch that shit, because that right there describes something very similar to my personal perspective, which is that, so as we just said previously, heaven and hell don't exist, and at the same time they do, because they are created. And if we have that power to create our reality, even beyond this lifetime, the state that we're in when we die dictates what comes afterwards. So I've said for a while that my goal, if you want to, like, for lack of a better word, my goal is to die in peace. Is to really die in peace.
Pretty much everyone's
and
goal.
In acceptance. In acceptance, right? Because with that, I can say, and even I don't really want to attach the words heaven or hell to it, but just the fact that I'm at peace with this moment means that I'm taking that peace to the other side. You know, there's a lot of people that die in stress. They die in trauma. They die in pain, not physical pain, just because regretting. You can be in physical pain and be like, you know what? This still makes sense.
Yeah,
I got shot to death, but this makes sense. Like, if you lived your life in a gang, for example, and you're like, all right, I'm going to die by the time I'm 21. I'm just here shooting up the ops with my homies. When you finally get gunned down, you're not really going out with stress, because you're like, I expected this. This is how I expected to go. So there's a certain level of peace attached to that.
Yeah, I see that. And basically, it's like, you know, oh, wait, did you disconnect? Hello?
No.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, I feel that actually, because it's basically people, like, they can die with regrets. They can die with a lot of regrets. It's like when they get to that point, they realize, oh shit, I didn't live doing what I wanted to do. I should have done this. I should have done that. Oh, why didn't I? Oh, damn it. And yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't know what's wrong or what's right, but it's when you were talking about that earlier, that's why it reminded me of Shaman King. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what happened in Shaman King. Like when they actually saw the Great Spirit, when you zoomed in to the Great Spirit, you saw that it was actually a lot of souls holding hands. And then you see a lot of like animals and birds flying around it. You're like, oh shit, it's accumulation of all the spirits on the planet. Yeah. So I'm guessing that's what you believe in then.
So I wouldn't say I believe, but that's my perspective.
Perspective.
That's what I'm open to. Or that's what I can see the clearest, let's say.
That when you die, you go to whatever belief system that you believe in. I mean,
yeah, something like that. Mm. Something along those lines.
Because I pondered this the other day, like, because if I do believe we have souls. And like we said before, everything is made out of energy. Like, that's why when you split the atom, it makes an insane amount. Like, when you actually split an atom, what comes out of it? A massive explosion. Because when you get down to the core of everything, it's made out of pure energy, right? So I do believe that when you have a bunch of people that believe in something so much, maybe that belief from all of these people, all this energy from people coming forth actually creates that thing in the first place. You know, if you believe in it, then it comes true. Like even in Japan, they teach kids from a young age. So let's say your child is acting up and they like slam their toy on the table. Then the parent will be like, oh, don't do that. Oh, look, why did you see? You hurt Mr. Table. Look what you did to Mr. Table. Mr. Table's hurt now. You hurt Mr. Table's feelings. Look what he did. And look what you did to Mr. Toy. The car toy is hurt now. You hurt, look, see, you hurt their feelings. And the child is like, oh, no, no, what? He's like, yeah, you have to say sorry to Mr. Table now. You have to, you know, say sorry. And the kid's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Table. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. So they pretty much have this philosophy that when you own objects, if you treat your object, whatever object it is, when you treat it with like, you know, care, then a part of your spirit or part of the energy and the care you put into it actually goes into the object, and the object itself becomes alive in a sense. So in that way, you have to take care of it, because this object is not just an inanimate object. It's actually alive, and you have to care for it. And that's why they have a lot of, folk tales of inanimate objects coming to life and becoming Oni and monsters and stuff like that.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's
I was reading about that as well in a book called Urban Shaman, actually. Oh. And dude was talking about how everything is alive and everything has a spirit, and that your life experience changes when you treat, so the objects around your house, when you treat them with respect, like when you speak to them. And I was thinking about when we were kids, right? And we would play with our toys, our action figures.
Yeah.
Like those motherfuckers were alive.
They were alive. Yeah, they were hype. They were light.
Yeah. So there's definitely something in there.
Mm-hmm. Because in the eyes of a kid, when you give, like, even with Legos, with bricks, dude, I remember I had Lego and I'm in my room and I'm creating all of these different things. When I created something, that thing was alive. It can be a spaceship, it can be a monster, and then I make two and they combine into a mega monster. I did so much shit with Lego, just bricks. But to me, I created this whole society of different things, and damn. The power of the kid's imagination is crazy. But my question is, where do you think souls come from? Like, if we're all, like, because here's the thing, one of the biggest debates. Are we already souls before we are placed on the earth? Or is it that when we are made on the earth is when a soul is created to go along with that babe, that fetus that is being made? Like, which is it? Is it soul that's placed onto the earth and connected to a fetus, or is it when the fetus is forming is when the soul comes along with it?
So what comes up for me there, I'm going to connect it to astrology as well.
Okay.
And so I the way I see it, souls exist before and beyond. So I say before, but beyond this realm in any case, because where souls exist, there is no time. That's the way I see it. So souls are like an infinite source of something, right? And then as an avatar is created on Earth, a soul can then be beamed into the avatar. And the way I see it as well, so this is where shit might get controversial, right?
I love it. Bring it. I want the controversial. Bring the controversial. I want it. Controversial. I want it.
Because there's a chance that a child doesn't have, do I want to say soul or spirit? Let's say spirit. Let's go with spirit.
Whoa.
There's a chance that a child doesn't have spirit until they take that first breath. Right?
Oh, that's why you're saying it's controversial. Ooh, okay, I get what you're trying to say.
Because there's a lot of debate going on around abortion and shit.
Yeah, that.
And at the end of the day, I don't want to tell people what to do with their bodies, man.
Yes.
You know, like, that's, I'm not a birth giving being, so I ain't gonna speak on what a birth giving being should do.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Okay, can I just say something real quickly on that? So for all the guys out there. For any man that has ever existed or will exist, whoever listens to this or doesn't, we do not give birth, okay? We do not have a vagina. We don't have ovaries. We do not give birth. We cannot do that. So for us to tell people who do give birth what to do with their bodies is the most biggest piece of disrespect anyone can do. Like, that's like women telling us what to do with our dicks. Oh, no, you can't masturbate. No, you can't stroke your balls. It's like, bro, it's my dick. I can do what I want. Just like it's their vagina, they can do what they want. So if you don't want a woman telling you what to do with your dick, don't tell a woman what to do with a vagina. It's like, you can give her an opinion. You can be like, I suggest maybe you have the baby, but you can't force her to. If she doesn't want to have it, she doesn't want to have it, because it's her body and it's her life and her responsibility for a kid that she doesn't want, if she wants it or not. So I think we need this whole abortion article. Just no, All right. No, it's her choice. It should always be her choice. All right. So let's stop being idiots. All right. End of discussion. I don't understand that. It's her choice. It's her body. It's her life. Let her do what she wants with it. So anyway, you're saying that when you don't know, because you're just saying you don't know if a fetus is implanted with, or the fetus avatar has a soul or not before or after birth.
Right, because there is light. See, and this is why I think it's important to make a distinction between soul and spirit as well, because there is life in the avatar already. There are impulses, right? The child moves around in the womb, but it's not conscious movement. It's the muscles, you know, there's electricity going through there, right?
Yes.
So it's like, oh yeah, baby's kicking. It's not saying, oh yeah, I'm trying to get out of this womb. It's just like, oh,
it's
the avatar realizes I have these muscles and I can. So it's consciousness on one level. But the way I see it, there's a new level of consciousness that comes in when that child takes the first breath. And that's why that's such a big deal and why babies cry upon coming out of the womb and taking that first breath of air, because that's like, oh shit, I'm now in this avatar and I'm not getting out again, not really, until this avatar dies properly. And so to relate that to astrology now, for the longest time, I thought astrology was some old bullshit. I'm like, it doesn't really make sense. How can, you know, just when you're born affect all of this stuff and blah, blah, blah. But going deeper into the whole everything is energy way of understanding things, I began to realize that, first of all, astrology is deeper than the sun sign, and there's a whole chart attached to it, a whole natal chart. And that secondly, at the moment of birth and taking that first breath, there are certain energies that are in this realm, that exist in this realm. So it depends on the position of the sun, the position of the moon, and the position of the major planets. And the position of all of those things affect the energy at any given moment. So right now, in this moment that we're speaking, the sun is in Cancer, yes? The moon is doing whatever it's doing. I think the moon is in Cancer as well at the moment. And the other planets are wherever they are. So there's a certain energy that exists on this planet. And being born into that energy and inhaling that energy is the energy that you go through life with. And so as I went through my natal chart and breaking it down, I was like, oh shit, this actually makes a lot of sense. I do have these tendencies, and these tendencies here are offset by these tendencies. And yes, this describes me quite well. And so does this, but that runs counter to this and blah, blah, blah. And like, when you really dive into a natal chart with an astrologer who knows what they're doing, there's a lot of insight that can be gained through that.
Okay. Now, and here's another thing, because as I get older, like if you were to tell me this when I, let's say, not even, let's say 4-3 years ago, if you were to tell me this, I'd be like, fuck astrology, man. Fuck that shit, man. That's a whole lot of bullshit. But the older I get, I realize that I cannot, because I'm not saying that I'm scientific. I'm always trying to see stuff in a logical kind of sense. And from what we think we as humans know, or the smart scientists think that they know. And what I realized that people actually don't know anything. It's like what we have all around us is what we know, what we can see, what we can touch, what we can taste. That's what we know. But there's so much beyond that that is baffling even the smartest of minds, that for me to say astrology is bullshit is the dumbest thing for me to say. I cannot either prove or disprove that astrology is a thing. And like we said, yes, there's energy that's flowing around us that we can't even see. And we can't even really notice. So maybe there is, or maybe there isn't, something to this astrology thing. Like, I know I'm going to bring something, like, I'm going to bring time travel into this just to make a point. And time travel is, think about it like this, right? I don't think time travel can never be a thing. And the reason why time travel cannot be a thing because people don't understand how time works, because time doesn't work in the way you think. It's not just moving in time, it's also moving in space. And what you need to understand is that the Earth is rotating around the sun, right? And not only is it rotating around the sun, it's also spinning as it's rotating around the sun. And as the sun itself is also rotating, and the sun, the actual solar system itself, is rotating around the galaxy. The galaxy itself is moving through its cluster group. It's how do I say it? What's it called? It's basically its cluster group, the group closest to it, and that cluster group is in a bigger cluster group, which is in a bigger one that's moving through the universe itself. So to go through time means to also go through space, which means just to go back 1 second from now, you will literally pop up in a different area than where you are currently at because of how fast everything is moving. You might find yourself floating in the middle of nowhere, like not even close to our galaxy kind of thing. That's how, you know, space works. What the hell's going on? So basically, there has to be some kind of, my point is there has to be some kind of validity to the movement of where things are in comparison to where it was before. Because it seems that, you know, when the moon gets into a certain area in front of the sun, you get a solar eclipse, or you get a red supermoon, or you get this, or you get that. Or when the Earth is in this certain spot, you get a meteor shower. So I'm guessing there has to be some sort of validity in, you know, where you are in space and time that will determine certain things. So I can't really rule out astronomy as being fake. Especially as so many different cultures had to look at the stars to determine how to live on this planet way before science was even a thing, way before people even knew anything. They were looking up at the stars for help. So there has to be some validity to it.
Yeah, most definitely. Especially when you relate it to the Dogon people.
What people?
The Dogon. There's a couple of books. The Sacred Science of the Dogon and the Sacred Symbols of the Dogon. The Science of the Dogon and Sacred Symbols of the Dogon. And the Dogon are an ancient people based in Mali. And they were speaking on stuff thousands of years ago that NASA only came up with a couple of decades back.
Explains.
I'm gonna leave it at that.
And why do you do this? Explain.
No, I cannot do it justice. Go and research the Dogon. There's a couple interesting videos on YouTube. There's a couple of books that I have.
Okay,
but just even if you just make symbols, like the symbols that NASA used today, and compare them to the symbols that the Dogon were using thousands of years ago, it's like, hold on, NASA, what? You know,
okay,
and yeah, as you were saying, like science does a great job of describing physical phenomena, and it's limited in that anything beyond that, what we might call metaphysical, is outside the realm of science, and then it's often labeled as pseudoscience or so on and so forth. And in terms of time travel, I think one of the biggest limitations in our thinking is that we think we must be in these physical bodies in order to travel through time. But if these physical bodies are on a one-way trip to the grave, like these avatars are on a one-way trip to the grave from the womb, in order to travel through time, you'd have to change form. And so this is where it brings up the conversation of the 666, right?
Oh my gosh.
Which is the six protons, six neutrons, and six electrons, which make up the carbon atom, right? So that the carbon atom is the 666. I'm not even going to talk about the Bible right now.
Okay.
The carbon atom is 666. So six protons, six neutrons, and six electrons.
Okay.
Now, there is also... There is a carbon atom with 616. So 6 protons, 1 neutron, and 6 electrons. So you still have the balance of the protons and the electrons, the positive, negative. But the neutrons, which make up a lot of the actual physical component of the carbon atom, which makes up a body, is less. So that makes it more fluid and less substantial, let's say, less physical. So in that form, perhaps that's how people can do things like, I'm saying people, right? But I'm going to say beings can do, it's how we come up with the idea of like passing through walls or of traveling through time. That doesn't matter. But what I'm saying is, in order to do something like travel through time, you'd have to change form. So, and that goes back into like astral projection and remote viewing, that kind of stuff that we were speaking about. So time travel in essence isn't, again, just in my perspective, isn't, okay, take this human body and travel back or forward into time. Time travel is, all right, how can I project to a higher place and then drop into a different part of this Earth experiment? Whether that be in time or space.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's more like the travel of consciousness.
Is that what ghosts are? Ghosts are just people trying to push their consciousness through space-time.
Quite possible. Yeah. It's quite possible.
Yeah. I mean, geez. But going back to this Dogon thing, you always do this. You always say, oh, this. Okay, no, you know what? Just give it, what symbols are NASA using that these other people use? Because America has been stealing symbols from people like forever. So like, I'm just saying, like, what's that Egyptian, pillar? And now it's in America. It's basically just
the obelisk.
Yeah, they pretty much just jacked the obelisk and put it next to friggin' Abe Lincoln and went, this is an American treasure. You just stole it from the Egyptians. That's what you freaking did. Well, okay.
Yeah.
So what about NASA? What symbols?
All right, so I've Googled it. No, I haven't Googled it. I've duck-duck-goed it.
What?
So...
Duck, duck, go.
You know what? I'm going to do one better. Give me a second. I'm going to go get the book. I'll be right back.
He always does this. He's always like, oh, man, let's go research it. No, man, talk about it, man. That's what we're here for. We're here to talk about it. Oh, man. Oh, the soul. So what do you guys think? What is a soul? Do you even believe that you have a soul? Is a soul a makeup of just feelings and emotions, or is it just, we're just carbon life forms and after we die, it's just darkness? Oh, but darkness. Or do you believe in what Primetime Aaron thinks, that whatever you believe in, whatever you're thinking, that's where you're going to go? I think I heard that from someone else as well, not just him, but someone else said that if you die thinking that you were with resentment and you thought that, oh, actually I was an asshole, then you yourself will place, like, you put yourself in your own hell. So when you die, you will go to hell because you think that you deserve to go to hell. Or if you died thinking that you were generally a nice person and you tried to do the right thing, and, you know, then maybe you go to some sort of heaven. Huh? It's very interesting, this experience we call humanity. Look at what's even happening today in this world. We've got global warming that's clearly messing up our planet. Clearly. Like, this heat is insane. This is an insane heat. It's not natural. Remember back in the day when it was hot, but not this kind of hot? Remember that? And then they go, oh no, that's... global warming is fake. What do you mean global warming is fake? The heat is so bad that there's places in America that are going through droughts right now. There's no water. Water is disappearing, and water is a very valuable resource, which we're just wasting, by the way. And we're just killing off other animals, by the way. We're just killing off other animals into extinction. We're destroying the wild, which is our only protection against global warming, by the way. We're destroying the oceans. We're destroying the coral reefs. We're destroying the forests. We're drinking up all of the water. We're pumping out all of the oil and then sticking it into the air, making the place hotter. I mean, like, and we have all the evidence that's saying that this is what's happening, and people don't really care. People don't really care. And it makes me feel like, do we even have souls in the first place, seeing as so much of us are so complacent, don't really care what's happening? This experience. I don't know, guys. I don't know. And what is prime time with this? With this Dogen.
I'm right here. I was listening to you. Speak.
Ah, okay.
I'm really struggling to find. What I can tell you though, to go have a look at is it's called the normal fish.
The what?
Normal fish. So N M M O.
M M O.
N U M M O. The normal fish.
N U M M O. N U M M O.
Yes, indeed.
Pneumo fish. What is pneumo? What comes up is...
So this is one of the...
Wait, what? The pneumo? Pneumo. Oh, here we go. Pneumo. Dogon mythology. Okay. Go on. What is about this pneumo?
So, sacred symbols of the Dogon... Peter advanced science. I'm really looking for. See, this is why I ain't really trying to speak on it, because there's like so many angles, and I don't have the words to really just say, oh yeah, this is this.
Okay, let me.
I'm not at that level of understanding.
So
as yet,
the Nomo or Pneumo are primordial ancestral spirits in Dogon religion and cosmogony. Oh, today my words. Venerated by the Dogon people of Mali. The word nomos is derived from a Dogon word meaning to make one drink. Nomos are usually described as amphibious, hermaphroditic, fish-like creatures. Folk art depictions of nomos show creatures with humanoid upper torsos, legs/feet, and a fish-like lower torso and tail. Nomos are also referred to as masters of the water, the monitors, and the teachers. Nomo can be a proper name of an individual or can refer to the group of spirits as a whole. For purposes of this article, Nomo refers to a specific individual, and Nomos is used to reference the group of beings. So this is the... Basically, this is the mythological people of Mali. Right.
They are very real. They exist to this day. They're not a tribe that hangs around with quote unquote regular people.
They're a tribe of people that live today.
Yeah, they're still alive to this day.
And they're basically mermaids, you're saying.
Are they mermaids?
They're fish-like creatures.
They have the god form, the arm, leg, arm, head.
Wait, what? Nah, I need to check this out. I don't believe that. Come on.
The Dogon are real people
that live today in Mali, and they're fish people. Are you kidding me?
The Dogon are ethnic group in the central plateau region of Mali in West Africa, south of the Niger Bend, near the Bandiagara, and in Burkina Faso. So they live to this day, right? The thing is, they have extensive knowledge about the Sirius star system, and knowledge that, again, was only discovered, let's say, fairly recently in the West. And these people, despite having only recently having had contact with the quote-unquote West, knew about all of this shit for a long time.
Oh, okay.
That Western science, that NASA has had to create all of this super expensive, super high-tech equipment to find out and observe, these people knew thousands of years ago.
Okay. So I'm just pretty much looking at it now. So basically, how did the Dogon tribe of Mali have advanced knowledge of astronomy? And I'm looking at this stone tablet right now, and it's got some complicated shit on it. Mm-hmm. It's got some complicated ass shit on it. So I'm going to just see if I can show this and display capture. Ooh-wee. That looked mad. How do I display?
Ooh, okay, here's a paragraph. Here's a paragraph.
Saying this. So yeah, it is. So basically, to be honest, they just look like Africans with really dope masks in my. But anyway, this right here, this thing, whatever this is, this looks cool. Hey, where did it go? Go to picture. Go to picture. Where did the picture go? Hey. Anyway, yeah, so they've got a lot of slabs which have a lot of interesting writing on it. I don't know what it's about. Sorry. But go on, what were you going to say?
So they're talking about American astronomer Alvin Clark came into contact with the Dogon people in 1862, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had deduced that Sirius B existed through using a telescope, which at that time was one of the most advanced. And that wasn't confirmed to exist until 1970. The Dogon knew about Sirius B hundreds of years before, and they had their own name for it and everything. They had very accurate descriptions that were, let's say, confirmed by science around that whole 1970 era. And what these Westerners cannot figure out is that, so they're saying this information is practically inaccessible without that astronomical equipment. Yet these people knew it. And they had Saturn depicted being surrounded by a sort of halo or ring. They knew that Jupiter had four companions, which are the moons. And they depicted Earth as a sphere, knowing that the sphere revolves around its axis. And that the galaxy is an immense spiral shape, quite like DNA, right?
Hmm.
And so it says, we know very well that this concept began to be disclosed by Western astronomers only at the beginning of this century. And they go on to say that for the Dogon, here's where we get into souls. For the Dogon, Sirius B was the first star created by a being that you might call God and represents the fulcrum point of the universe. All matter developed from that point, including souls, following a complex spiral motion. So again, we were speaking about that spiral motion in the galaxy and in the universe, which also exists within our DNA. It said the same that is symbolized in the intertwined baskets. So these people's symbols and the way they were depicting the cosmos has all been confirmed by super high-tech, super advanced astronomical equipment.
What? Send me this link. Send me this link.
Yeah, bro.
What? So this tribe of people already figured all of this stuff out before NASA came along.
Knew this shit. And that's what I'm saying. When we're talking about technology, it's like, what the fuck is, you know, we don't know what technology is.
No, but
we don't even know what technology is.
But here's the thing. I think we said this in the earlier podcast as well, on one of the previous ones. It literally just came and went out of my mind. But we already said how did they make Stonehenge? How did they make the pyramids? How did they make the all of these other things in other places around the world? How did they get these massive stones structures up here like this with the technology they had back then? How the hell did they possibly do this? And people go, slaves. Is that okay? Yeah, they had slaves, but how did the slaves get that up there? You can't have like hundreds of slaves just climbing up trying to drag this massive slab up there. It's like, no, there's no signs that they dragged the slab up there. How the hell did they do that? You know?
And again, it's with the assumption that it was built in the physical world at all.
You and this built out of physical world.
It could have been built in a different dimension and it projected into this one.
Maybe. But one thing I know for 100% of a fact is that the first human beings, what was the first source of anything? It was the sun. What was the second one? The stars. and the moon. So they looked up at the sky and saw all of the, you know, the artistry of the heavens, and they started to chart the heavens to understand their place in the universe. And that's how I keep saying that human beings back there were insanely smart. We are living off of the backs of their brains. What they did in the initial parts of humanity is why we have everything now. They mapped the stars. They mapped how long it takes to get from here to here. So I don't find it really that strange where you go to a tribe and go, what the, how did they know this shit? Because they're not poisoned by all of the technology and bullshit and distractions we have today. They've just looked up at the stars and just went, 2 and 2 makes 4, bitches. Look at the stars, you know? It's all up there. Just take a look. That's how humans did it for millennia and millennia before we had GPS, so.
Yeah, man. I was reading about another, I think it was a tracker tribe. Was it the South African, what do you call it, the Xhosa people? I don't remember if it was them. I was reading this in a book years ago, The Science of Self. And dude was talking about how they ran these experiments where they put these people in the back of a van, drove them to wherever, and said, find your way back. And every single time they did it without fail. Like, that's how in tune they are with their environment. They can navigate their way from anywhere to anywhere just by understanding what this whole thing is. And we don't know how to do that. We are dumb as fuck.
Dude, we are dumb as fuck. Daily stupid.
Dumb. None of us can find our way anywhere. If you put us out in the forest, we fucking die in 24 hours probably. Guys, it's a joke. We are so incompetent. It's hilarious. It's painful sometimes. It's like, I can't do shit.
Dude, it's so true.
It's like, I can cook food if you give me a cooker. All right? If you give me a cooker, even if you give me some fucking, you know, but most of the time I got to go to the supermarket or at least to a farmer's market, right? Where he's picked the vegetables ready. If you say, exactly. All right, go and find the right shit to pick so you don't kill yourself, I'd be like, fuck. Damn, I need to phone a friend. I may need some 50-50 lifeline. I don't know. Like, give me something.
Give me lifelines. Oh, my God. Look, I was thinking, oh, dude. Like, this is such a good thing because it goes into what I was teaching the kids, or what they're learning now, I should say, which is AI and how kids these days, kids born now, what they are, what, 13, 14. So they were literally born in the technological age. And when you tell, like, I remember I was telling them, okay, guys, when do you think the first phone, like the first smartphone, like not the first phone, but the first smartphone, what year do you think? And all of them are going, 2009. And I'm like, no. They're like, what? 2010. I'm like, no. They're like, 2005? I'm like, no, it was back in 1992. And then they sold it in 1994. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah. And then when I showed it to them, they're like, that's not a smartphone. I'm like, yeah, because you don't know what a pre-smartphone looked like, because you were born into iPads and Android and Huawei. You were born into that. But we were born in the age where we had to remember numbers, not store them on our phone. Remember back in the day when you had to fully remember your house number? Like, if you don't... Like, you had to remember your house number, your mum's number, your dad's number. You had to remember them off by heart or you're fucked. You know, now I don't even remember my own number. I have to constantly look at my phone and go, what's my number again? I don't even remember.
Man, I'm telling you that it has its pros and cons in that it frees up brain space for other things. But at the same time, it's like, who are we depending on now for the basic?
Exactly, the fundamentals.
Man.
And that goes into the souls thing, because we now, so you're saying, well, to be honest, I believe so as well. These bodies are not our real bodies. I do believe these bodies are avatars, regardless if you think of it from a scientific or religious point of view. These bodies we're rolling in is not all of what a human is. This is just a physical being, that we are more than just these bodies. So you can call them avatars if you so wish to do so. But what happens when we start to create AI? Because it's already happening. Like I told these kids, what is the most complex AI that we have right now that people cannot live without regardless? And they were like, we don't know. I'm like, and I pulled up my phone and they were like, oh, the smartphone. I'm like, yeah, because imagine what will happen if I drop this and it broke right now. I'd be like, oh shit, no, my phone. Oh, fuck, no. And they all started laughing because they're like, yeah, if your phone is gone, it's like, what the fuck do you do? Like, oh shit, you're in trouble. Because now our phones have pretty much become a part of who we are. We are technically what? We're androids now? Is it androids? No,
yeah,
cyborgs. Cyborgs? Mm. Is it cyborgs? Because I think a cyborg is a human that's been modified, and android is a robot that looks like a human, correct? Mm. Is that correct?
I don't know. Let's go check this definition.
I think I'm correct. I believe a cyborg is a human with robot.
Android is a robot that resembles a human.
So,
and
cyborg is cyborg. Okay, so I am correct. Okay, cool. So we're pretty much, we're technically cyborgs because we literally cannot walk around without our iPhones and iPads and Androids and Huawei's and Google Pixels and all of these stuff. We can't live without them now. So we're technically cyborgs. So what happens when we keep making shit that we rely on? We have phones that store our information. We have, we're now getting robots that can clean the house by itself so we don't have to clean. Now we're going to have self-checkout things that we don't need clerks anymore. There's so many things disappearing. And like you said, it frees us up to do other things. That's what people say. It will free you up to be more creative and humans can do more creative things. But then at what cost? Because now simple things that we used to be able to do, like just life things, like we used to be able to read a map and just know where to go. Or you had to just remember. You didn't even need a map. You just knew if I walk down this way for this amount of time and then take a left, take a right, go past the bridge, go to the river. When I get the river, hit a left and go down there. That's where I need to go. You just knew it off by heart. But now you need Google Maps. You need Google Maps. If someone gave you a map now, you're like, how the fuck do I read a map? I can't read this shit. We lose basic things. What would that do to us? What would that do to our soul? Would that fuck us up?
So, the way I see it, first of all, to show how extreme it is, when I played GTA Vice City back in the day.
Let's go.
Right. I knew my way around Vice City. I knew the shortcuts, the back roads, the jump locations, you know, enough of them. And all of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
When I caught on GTA 5, I'm using the GPS everywhere I go to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is a damn shame. I don't even know my way around this first when I go central. Fucking hell me. And that's in a virtual world already. Right?
Yeah.
So come back into this world now.
By the way, that was a very great comparison, by the way. I know that was very short, but that was an amazing comparison. I really want to emphasize that because that was a really good way to explain it. So Vice City, there was no GPS. Vice City, you had to remember where to drive and where to go, right? And then you had to know all the shortcuts to get to a place quick, especially if you want to get away from the police and stuff. But now in GTA 5, the car or the phone has a GPS. So technically you don't have to remember because the GPS just points you where you need to go. So you're not, in a sense, you're kind of not as plugged into the world as you should be. So using your example, does that mean that the more technology that we make, then the less plugged in we are into this world that we should be plugged into, which means that our avatars will be what? Will become obsolete? Will we not need these avatars anymore because we're not as plugged into the world as we should be?
It looks like we're plugged in a different way.
Okay.
And the avatars are potentially losing their, not their use, but maybe becoming obsolete on that Ready Player One vibe, right? Where you can do everything.
Exactly.
From the comfort of your own home, as long as you got the Oasis.
Yeah.
in terms of what that means for a soul, if we can create virtual worlds inside of this one, which is, you know, more than likely a virtual world in itself, that also means that as soon as that other virtual world advances enough, we can create another virtual world inside of that virtual world. And in terms of the soul, that means that the soul just goes deeper and deeper into new matrices, into deeper matrices. And it's possible. I don't think the soul can be damaged. I feel like the soul always remains pure. However, the soul can forget who and what it is and get lost in a reality.
I mean, technically, that's what people are doing already.
Right.
Like, yeah, exactly. You can even take that, what was it? That, the quote. Remember that story of a couple who were so into playing World of Warcraft, they forgot about their child, and their child ended up dying because the couple were playing World of Warcraft so much. They were so plugged into that game, they forgot they had a baby, and the baby died.
That's Pete.
So, in a sense, like, so, if you think about it, does that, who's to say that this isn't already a world we already created from something before? What if we already were in a place where we were already alive doing something? We created this world and we got so attached to it. This is us now completely in the world we created, and we've left that one. And now we've created another virtual world, all these games and all this AI and AR and stuff, and we're going to go deeper into that and deeper and deeper, and we're going to keep creating cascades of, like you said, matrixes, and constantly keep forgetting who we are.
Exactly that.
Bad.
I don't remember what was before this life. It's just sort of, I woke up in this place one day, right? And similarly to when I'm playing GTA and I'm controlling Franklin or Michael or Trevor, they think they're real. They think they're real characters interacting with real other people because of how they're programmed.
Oh, see, I hate getting into stuff like that because it's kind of freaky. It is kind of freaky because, yes, I know, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about video games. But here's what you need to understand. Like, it's so hard to understand. Because like you said, these characters, even though it is a video game, they are programmed to feel pain. They're programmed to walk around, to have these stories, to have, regardless if they're emotional or not, to do all of these storylines and these quests. And they're programmed to do that. To us, it's a video game, but to that character, it's their world. But then we go, but it's just a game. They don't have feelings. What do you say to people who say that? It's just a video game. They're just characters. They're zeros and ones. They're not real. They're not alive.
What do I say to them?
Yeah.
I say to them, well, this is zeros and ones as well. So how do you want to define life? How do you want to define creation?
Oh, that's a good one. How do you want to define creation? Define creation. That's actually a good response. It's true. How do you want to define creation? What is creation? What is creation? Because if we were created from a god, as some people think, and then we as creation create all of these games and all of these AI things that respond to what we do in a game. Now look at Skyrim. Look at how you interact with things in the game and then you get certain responses. I mean, define creation isn't like, as whatever God created us that created this world, and we have our responses and stuff, we created a world that also does the same thing.
And that's what a god is. A god is the creator of a world, so to speak. You can also break down the words or the word god into the letters G-O-D and assign them their own words, which makes you the generator, the operator, and the destroyer of worlds. the one to create it, the one to operate it, and the one to destroy it. If I create, and this is where we bring in that term intellectual property as well, right? Because if I create something from my mind, it's my intellectual property and I am the god of that world. All of the characters that exist within that belong to me. And at the same time, they are me. They only exist because I exist. They came into creation. They came into existence through me. So they all walk around with my essence. I know them. I understand them inside out. I program them. And yes, I give them free will, but ultimately they have a destiny.
Dude, that's creepy. That's actually kind of creepy because that's what we are to whatever divine being or whatever created us.
Yes.
That is mad.
The question becomes, yeah. You want to fight it, or do you want to let go?
Say that again?
The question becomes, do you want to fight it, like fight against what is, or let go and enjoy the ride?
Okay, what's the consequences of both? I want to, let's go into the, what's the consequence? Okay, so let's say I choose to fight. No, okay. No, let's do with the fight one. What if I choose to fight against it? What would happen?
So there's a Bible story of Jonah,
mm-hmm.
who had some shit to do. He had some people to go and preach to, right? And he was like, nah, fuck that. He was like, I don't want to go preach. That's long. I'm going to, where did he go? Did he try to go to Spain or something to get bitches? I don't remember.
Man, fuck this preacher. I want to get some bitches.
And he got shipwrecked and swallowed by a whale, right? We're not going to talk about whether that's, you know, because
factual.
Fucking whale strokes anyway, right? But in any case, the symbolism is he fucked up. He tried to run away and he got shipwrecked and swallowed by a whale and was sitting there for 3 days. And he was like, all right, you know what? I really don't want to get shipwrecked and swallowed by whales anymore. That seems kind of long. That seems more difficult than just doing what I was going to do in the first place. So let me just go ahead and do that. And that's basically how I live my life. All right. There are certain things that I feel myself fighting against. I'm like, I really don't want that. But if it's my path, I can feel that because there's no resistance to it. It's just like, all right, cool. This is what needs to be done. I need to have this conversation, you know, so I can alleviate myself of this stress, this resistance. I need to go this way. I need to move to this place. You know, I need to call this person, or I need to set boundaries with this person, or whatever it may be. Whatever, just a decision to moment to moment decisions, which are also zeros and ones. Everything that you ever do is either one or zero. It's either yes or no. So
beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's actually really beautiful. I do believe. See, and that's the thing. That's why I liked speaking to you on this podcast. I don't know how people are reacting when they listen to this, because I think maybe a lot of people think you're very contradictory. I thought I was contradictory, but I think you're way more contradictory than I am. But I love talking to you because you are free. You are like, this is who I am, unapologetically, and deal with it. This is how I roll. And a lot of people need to be like that. Like, I find myself, just an example, I find myself in work. And there are times where I want to just say something, but I know that if I say that thing, it's just going to cause situation, which I just don't want to, I can't be bothered to have this situation, so I hold my tongue. And sometimes I'm like, is it a good thing for me to hold my tongue, or is it a bad thing? Because on one side, it means that I'm not, you know, stirring the water. I'm not making shit uncomfortable. But then on another side, it's like, I'm not being true to who I am and just saying it in the moment. Because at least if I say it, then everyone knows what's up now. Everyone knows what's up. Everyone knows what I'm thinking. Boom, bish, bash, bosh, it's done. And I don't have to explain myself again. So it's kind of in that, I'm in this space where it's like, oh, there are times when I just have to be, like, hold my tongue or say it. But you're basically saying, don't do that. Just whatever, don't resist. Just whatever you're thinking, whatever you're saying. If you feel like you need to say it or feel like you need to do it and there's no resistance, do it.
It's for everyone else to decide how it works for them best, you know? But the way I see it is, especially as you were describing that discomfort, if you were to say something, someone's going to feel that discomfort. So it can either come through that way, through what you consider to be truth, and then these people have to deal with that discomfort, which ultimately is coming from them, or you take that discomfort home with you because you didn't say something.
Pretty much.
So someone's going to feel it. And like a selfish standpoint, like, oh yeah, I don't want to feel uncomfortable, so fuck everyone, I'm going to just say what I want. It's not that. It's just like, you know, what is true? Have I told the story about when I kept it 100 with that guy who was paying my invoices?
Oh, no, it was, Was it, you mean the woman? Is this a different story?
Oh, shit. We have a new story.
Damn. Oh, story time. Yeah. Story time.
So, yes. So one of the places that I was working as a freelance teacher, and it was probably my favorite place to work, mainly because of the students that came through there. It wasn't a school per se, but it was a private space where they would come after their regular school to get some high quality English with a native. And I met some really cool people that I'm in touch with quite a few of them still.
Cool.
And I was doing some work with a company over here through that school. So they're like a pharmaceutical company, which was the times that I came into it was very interesting because I was coming into a point of my life where I was coming away from pharmaceutical products. And then it was like, here you go and teach English in this pharmaceutical company, in this startup, where they do everything. We've got drugs all over the place. And I met some cool ass people there, like mainly women, like grown women in their 50s. Like they were grown women. So they're at that point in their life where they don't give a fuck.
They don't give a shit.
Exactly. They give so, if you contrast a 50-year-old woman with a woman in her mid-20s,
hey,
it's night and day, just in terms of the level of self-acceptance that has come into play. And yeah, they still have insecurities and such. You know, they don't just get rid of everything, but they just don't care about the same shit. And it's refreshing for me. Mm-hmm. I've always loved to be in the company of older women like that.
I agree.
And yeah, man. So there's a certain way I came in taking over from someone else who was teaching there before. He was going through some health issues or something. And I came in, and this was also at the time where everything was going on lockdown. So I was only in that company for a few weeks before everything switched online. And so there are certain course sheets that need to be filled out to make sure that you keep track of how many hours you've taught, how many sessions are left, and so I can get paid accurately, right? So I said to this dude who takes care of the invoices, the manager, the boss of his company, I said to him, how would you like these filled in? And he said, oh yeah, just do this and just do that and it's cool. I said, all right, no worries. So I filled it in like that for months. And it was like coming into September of the year. And I said, all right, so here's these invoices now, here's these course sheets. And he's like, why have you done it like this? I said, I just did it the way you told me to. You know, this is what you asked for. So here you go. Take care of it. And he's like, yeah, but this doesn't work here. And, you know, this isn't clear. And the 1.5 hours is the same as the 1 hour. I said, listen, we can talk about this. At the end of the day, I did this the way that you asked me to, you know? And he's like, yeah, but this doesn't make any sense. And I could tell that he was getting stressed, right? And he has a bit of a reputation of not being exactly a people person. And I just realized that he wasn't actually listening to me. He wasn't actually listening. He was hearing words and then saying words back. And I began to get impatient. Now, usually what I would do being, you know, I'll try to be the bigger person, try to be the calm person and find a way to keep my cool, and just be like, all right, yeah, cool. All right, yeah, I'll take care of it, whatever. This time, the being inside me said, no, not today. Today, you're going to be honest. Today, you're going to be very honest. So I began to raise my voice. And I said, this is bullshit. I said, you need to get your shit in order. And he said, why are you raising your voice? I looked at him, see, and sometimes that would activate the whole, you know, angry black guy programming where I said, all right, let me just make sure I'm not perceived as aggressive. Yeah. This time he said, why are you raising your voice? I looked him dead in the eyes. I said, because I am pissed off. I said that to him. I said, I'm raising my voice because I'm pissed off. And he was like, oh shit. He didn't expect that. He didn't expect that. The moment I dropped that, he very quickly found a way to fix it so that we could come to an understanding.
Exactly. He's like, I don't want to be in this situation at all.
Oh, man. I've told that story a few times, right? Especially to people that I'm working with in my coaching space. And they always take something from it that they can apply to their life because they've had similar situations. And they always have like an interesting insight to go to that. But that story right there was a moment of liberation for me. Because instead of always being the person to try and solve the issue, always trying to be the one that was, you know, super understanding and like, oh, yeah, maybe he's having a bad day. It's like, no, I'm going to just be honest about how I'm feeling. That was it. I just wanted to be honest about my feelings. And I got called out for raising my voice. I said, yes, I am raising my voice because this is how I'm feeling. And I walked out of that room, like, just feeling expanded, feeling like an expanded version of myself, just because I said how I was feeling. Yeah, man.
That's great. I do believe, like, I forgot who sang that song, but there's a song called Honesty, and it's like, honesty is such a lonely word. Everyone is so untrue. Everyone, Billy Joel, there we go, Billy Joel. And it's called Honesty. Mm. And I know it's not the best of songs, but if you listen to the lyrics, it really does just tell about how everyone is not honest. So when you are honest, it either makes you extremely lonely because no one likes someone who actually tells the truth. But sometimes in certain situations, especially in that situation where he's probably used to people just saying, okay, sorry, blah, blah, blah. But when you were like, I am pissed off, he's like, oh shit. Oh shit, I did a bad, oh shit, I don't want to deal with this right now, oh shit. So sometimes people, the honesty is just such a good thing. But yeah, okay. So basically be true to yourself, be honest with yourself, basically. Be honest with yourself. So last question is, so that's what you do that's what happens if you fight the system. If you fight the system, then you're gonna be like what's his name? Thingy in the whale. I forgot his name.
Jonah.
Yeah, Jonah. You're going to be like Jonah. He's going to be in a whale. You're going to be in a lot of shit. So if you go against the system, you're fucked. So what happens when you just say fuck it and you let go? What happens?
So it depends on what you are letting go into. Because what a lot of us are fighting is what's actually going on inside us. We're not fighting anything outside of us. We're fighting what's going on within. You know, we're fighting the parts of us that say, you don't actually want to be doing this, do you? We resist that and we're like, yeah, but maybe it's a good idea because this, that, and the other. And we come up with logical reasons for why it's a good idea, even though in our hearts it's just like, fuck this. This isn't me. This isn't me. So that's the biggest fight right there. And the origin of that fight is safety. We all need to have a sense of safety and security. And, you know, we've spoken about the dynamics with our parents and particularly with the mother. And so this relates to programming as well. The most powerful programmer on the planet is a mother, bar none. So if you want to take over a culture, take over the minds of the mothers of that culture and you'll have. Mothers are the primary and most powerful programmers of the mind. And so, because our mothers are traumatized, what happens is they find it difficult to relate to us in their purest form. And so then in order to just be able to be with them and, you know, have them feed us and take care of us, we adapt and we go against our nature so we can create some sense of safety and security. And then as we get older, anything that goes against those mechanisms that we've built up threaten to, like, we literally think we're going to die. Some of us think, if I tell the truth, I'm going to die. Like, that's a legitimate feeling that a lot of us have. Because, you know, people aren't going to accept me. They're going to shut me out. Ain't no one going to like me. I'll never find a partner. You know, all of these things come up and they feel very, very real. Yeah, man. And so it's a journey of creating new forms of safety and security within ourselves so we can actually respect and honor that part of us. And that's how we learn to let go. That's how we learn to let go and to just listen to our heart, man. That's the hub of everything. That's the hub of everything. That's the one thing that beats the whole time throughout this whole life experience. It's just beating. So if we ain't gonna listen to that, you know, what the fuck are we gonna listen to?
Like that. And with that, ladies and gents, we've come to the end. Jeez. If we don't listen to our hearts, what will we listen to? And our souls are just beings trapped, not trapped, but just are occupying these avatars that are pretty much our anchors to this physical world for us to, I don't know, I guess learn something. We're supposed to learn something from being here, learn something from life, maybe enrich our souls. I don't know. Let you decide that. Blah, words. How are we going to end this one, Aaron?
How are we going to end? I would say, I encourage everyone listening to it, but literally just a minute, just to be silent and put your hand on your heart and just feel it beating and feel where that energy is leading to. Yeah, man. Just do that for a minute, just a minute out of your day. See what happens.
Hand on heart, feel it beat. That we leave you to just, yeah, you're special. If you don't think so, follow your heart, be honest, have a good life, as always. See you on the next one. We out. Hey. Did you say peace? You said it so quickly. You said it so quickly.